Captain's Log Supplemental by Chychak, read by CookieMom6067. Captain's Log, Stardate 5839.6. The Enterprise is in orbit around the settler moon of Inksbreak, attending to an outbreak of 11-teen flu that claimed the settlement's only doctor. Naturally, we were happy to volunteer our own CMO to help them out. "Well, this is charming," Kirk says, as he and McCoy beam down onto the planet. "If it wasn't for half the settlement dying, it'd be paradise," McCoy gripes. But Kirk just grins back, guileless. "Go forth and doctor, doctor," he says. "I'm going for a walk, get some fresh air, see the sights." The planet reminds him of the Swiss Alps. Dramatic mountains topped with sugar dust snow, with grassy lowlands and picturesque villages dotted along the pass. Jim settles down on a small rock and flips open his communicator. He's behind on logging ship's work, and there's no time like the present to catch up. He's about to start dictating when he hears someone approach behind him. "Captain," Spock says, "I wish to speak to you about a delicate matter." It is strange for Spock to be so visibly nervous, and most people would not be able to even pick that emotion out on him, but after everything they've been through recently, Jim knows the signs. He smiles in a way he hopes is reassuring. "Sure, but call me Jim if we're going to talk about affairs of the heart." He means this, and when Spock doesn't move to sit down, Jim stands up and forces himself to meet his eyes. Time seems to slow. Spock looks like he's going to be sick, and a sympathetic flutter starts in Jim's stomach. "Jim," he says, in that deep, dark voice, "I have a confession to make to you. Our experiences on Reuteri 4 cannot be ignored further." The communicator's chirp is the worst sound in the whole galaxy, and they both flinch. "It can wait," Jim says. "Continue." The communicator chirps again, this time on the emergency band. "Captain," Spock says, breaking the tension, "it can wait." "I'll find you after," Jim says, flipping open the hated thing, watching as Spock pulls himself back together and walks away. "Captain here." Crisis resolved, Jim looks for Spock, but he is beamed back to the ship and all indications are set to do not disturb, so Jim returns to the idol and finally begins to work on his logs. Captain's log, supplemental to previous log 7653.2, append to end. The findings from the away mission to Reuteri 4 left us with more questions than answers. How did they manage to develop spaceflight before food preservation, with winters as harsh as those we witnessed? Spock petitioned the Admiralty to give us more time, but we were due to move on to the fish people of... His voice breaks, stumbling at the memory. Tahika 12, yes. Thankfully, that mission had been well documented, and so he skips over it and all the emotion locked within. All in all, he spends a pleasant hour catching up on admin, refilling his lungs with non-recycled oxygen, and admiring the picturesque scenery with no one interrupting him with a clipboard. A message comes through that they will be returning to the ship in 10 minutes, and so Jim has just enough time to indulge himself one final log. Captain's personal log. "This planet is frankly beautiful. I wish that we could stay here for just a while longer to preserve this stolen moment. But alas, responsibility will call me back from this little slice of heaven soon. But as a great man once said, the best of days don't last forever. Best, then, to seize them full on and leave with no regrets." He pauses. "I will be returning to a conversation with my first officer that is sitting, waiting on a comma. Perhaps knowing Spock, it is a semicolon, but for me, it is an ellipsis. We have much to speak about, but I cannot deny that I am nervous. I have faced down Klingons, Romulans, the worst horrors of the galaxy, but an emotionally honest conversation with my first, to speak that which has been so long unspoken between us," he sighs. End personal log. He didn't notice the glowing rock at all, but that's how these stories go. For what it's worth, it was quite a sunny day. "Jim, I'm ready to leave," McCoy yells at him from the next hill, and so Jim gets up and walks away. When he arrives 10 minutes later, McCoy is already kvetching. "You're getting soft. You should have been here 3 minutes ago by Starfleet fitness standards. I'm going to get written up for letting you get so decrepit on my watch." And before Jim can protest, he flips open his communicator. "McCoy to Enterprise, 2 to beam up." They shimmer back to solidity on the ship, and McCoy claps him on the back. "See you on the treadmill, Captain," he says, and Jim rolls his eyes. Captain's log, supplemental. Bones is implying I'm fat again. Maybe he should try sitting on his ass for 8 hours a day while dealing with one of the most stressful jobs in the galaxy. I swear, one of these days, I'll give him a piece of my mind. He turns to leave, but is surprised that McCoy is still standing there, blue eyes wide as dinner plates. Captain, did you mean to say that? Jim just stares at him. Say what, he means to say, but what comes out instead is supplemental to the supplemental. My inside words seem to have their outdoor shoes on. I will report to sickbay before I cause a diplomatic incident. I'd put good money on a mutiny first, McCoy mutters, gripping Jim's elbow like going to sickbay hadn't been his idea first. Well, I can't see anything wrong with you, McCoy says, apart from the minor decline in cardiovascular health and the impact of last month's incidents, but those do not seem to be any worse. Your brain looks about as good as it usually does, by which I would prefer it if you would see the ship's counselor, especially considering what you just went through, but there is at least no fresh trauma. Captain's log. A medical mystery upon the Enterprise, with me at its heart. It is inconvenient that this should be happening. The good doctor declares himself stumped. Now, I didn't say that, McCoy interrupts. It is a cruel irony that just as I get up to date with my logs, fate puts this upon me. You're up to date with your logs? His yeoman says, pulling out her pad. Wow, you really are. They're all here, everything that was missing. She turns to McCoy. This has to be related, right, Doctor? Bones shrugs. I'm going to agree with you so we don't get another soliloquy. Is he usually this long-winded? She doesn't say anything, but her face is a log unto itself. Kirk frowns. Supplemental. The Yeoman Corps are not appreciative of my dictations. It is a curse to not be appreciated in my own time. The younger generation are truly a worry, and none more than Yeoman Cassidy. And with that, it's time for good captains to go back into the scanner, Bones exclaims, ushering the yeoman out of the room as her lip begins to wobble. Jim is quarantined in sickbay. In case it's catching, Bones says, though I imagine all the admin staff would love it if it was, and call Spock, but not before making Jim tell him in as quick a log as possible where exactly he did his mammoth dictation. I'm going to spare Spock this for now, Bones says, gesturing at Jim's whole deal, for which I expect to receive at least the Medal of Valor for my great sacrifice. And then he leaves Jim to soliloquy with just the computer for company. They come back up from the planet an hour later, during which Jim has recorded 6 new logs but deleted each one of them thanks to the ancient keyboard he digs out of McCoy's bottom drawer, the computer getting far too confused otherwise. Our searches were unsatisfactory. Spock says, placing a lump of exotic matter on the biobed, this is an inert slab of basalt. Translation is just a rock, McCoy says helpfully. Captain's log, supplemental. The findings from the planet are inconclusive. However, through application of denobulin meditation techniques, I believe that I have managed to get my ejaculations under control. My choice of language, however, remains somewhat unusual. However, I believe the literacy levels of the command staff will be able to accommodate. During this, McCoy is once again scanning him while Spock holds a rock near him, but even Jim can see nothing has happened. Well, I don't really want to keep you here wittering on until you finally ruin our friendship for good or cause my eyes to finally roll out of my head. And since I cannot see anything wrong with you, I'm releasing you for light duty. I am told by your yeoman that you have a backlog of reports to read. Perhaps you can get through those. Jim just nods, biting his lips from the inside to keep in everything he wants to dictate. He notes that Spock has not said anything, but has raised his right eyebrow almost to his hairline, suppressing the fascination that is so obviously brewing. He clasps his hands behind his back and leaves sickbay as fast as he can and heads for the mess. It has been a long time since lunch, and all this dictation has built up an appetite. Captain's log. The mess has a rare treat of Carpathian fruit salad tonight. I have long declared this my favorite, but alas, I am tempted by the fruit of another. Jim dictates this to himself in the queue as quietly as he can, gazing along the queue while the ensign next to him pretends not to hear. He gets the fruit salad and a chicken burger because it has been a long day. He likes to eat among the crew every now and then. He knows he probably shouldn't be dining with them tonight of all nights, but he's an ornery bastard sometimes. He feels fine. He must control the logs. He takes a seat at an open table and tucks into the burger, which is actually all right. He must dictate compliments to the food replicator. He notices the crew watching him, and none have approached him yet. But eventually, Chekov comes over, joined at the hip to Sulu as usual. "Captain, sir," he asks, indicating the spare seats with his jaunty eyebrows. Jim smiles and kicks the chairs out, but before Sulu and Chekov can even sit down, Jim finds himself monologuing. "Captain's log, supplemental. My dinner guests tonight are Lieutenant Sulu and Ensign Chekov, a charming pair of gifted officers, popular with the crew, and if the rumors are to be believed, frequent visitors of each other's bunks. It is a difficult situation. Fraternization is permitted in the lower ranks, but bridge officer status confers some additional authority. But how can I cast aspersions when I myself have feelings that the uniform code would not approve of?" The room has gone deathly silent, with all present hanging on his every word, and Jim feels awful but forces himself to look at Chekov and Sulu in the eye. Fittingly, they look devastated, and Jim, embarrassed, just takes himself and his tray to sickbay, thankfully without another word. Entering Bones' office, Jim puts down his tray and dictates desperately, "Captain's log. My medical team are required. The captain is thoroughly incapacitated. Bones, my friend, fucking fix it. I am begging you." Bones raises an eyebrow, scans him, and then sighs. "Okay, I'm calling in the cavalry. Stay here." The cavalry turns out to be Nurse Chapel and Spock, both of whom seem more than a little excited to get their fingers into his unredacted medical records. Jim digs his fingernails into his thigh and literally bites his tongue to suppress the log that rises as a result of that. Chapel frowns as she scrolls at Kirk's medical record. "I can't see anything specific that could be causing it. It says here, though, Kirk and Spock were on Ruteri 4 for a month alone. That planet has a lot of novel radiation. Could that be contributing to something otherwise inert in the rock?" Bones shakes his head. "This isn't affecting Spock. And anyway, Jim had a clean bill of health both before and after." Spock interrupts him pointedly. "You say that the captain has a clean bill of health now. Perhaps we cannot rely on your backwards diagnostics when science tells us something is happening." "Well, what if it isn't science?" McCoy asks, a little more confrontationally. Spock raises an eyebrow. "Everything is science in some form or another, Doctor, even medicine, hard as it is to believe." McCoy glares at him. "I assume that Clark's third law is still on the books, or am I out of date there as well? This whole thing is impossible, and if any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic..." Jim can't help but notice that Spock looks smug, which honestly should be making McCoy nervous. "I concede it is a plausible rebuttal," Spock says, a twinkle in his eye, "especially once we consider the applicability of Clark's first law. When a distinguished but elderly scientist states that something is possible, he is almost certainly right. When he states that something is impossible, he is very probably wrong." McCoy sputters, "Why, you... I am not elderly." "Captain's log. Supplemental. Jim, I swear to God, if you log now, I'll beat you to death with my own two hands." Jim makes the executive captainly decision to confine himself to quarters until this thing either wears off or he's removed from command for inappropriate commentary, and manages to get through the rest of the evening with only some light functional logging, and even manages to apologize to his yeoman in a roundabout way that involves her cowering in the door and him playing portions of his other logs at her to make her realize he does appreciate her. Once she is placated, he locks the door with a sigh and manages to read three reports, but his heart isn't really in it. He's preparing for bed when there's a chime on the door, and rather than even try to call it through, Jim gets up and uses the manual override. Spock is there, hands clasped behind his back. "Sir, Jim, I must speak to you." Jim gestures for him to enter and waits as Spock crosses the room before closing the door and taking a deep breath. "Captain's log," Jim says before Spock can even get a word out. "The moment I have been dreading has arrived." Spock crosses his arms and looks unamused. "I cannot help but want to hold myself back. He is here, in my private space, and it is like Ruteri 4 all over again. Torture." "Is this one of your human japes taunting me?" Spock asks, devastated. "I do not find it amusing. I have come to you in confidence as a friend, and you..." Jim groans and grabs his pad and gestures for Spock to be quiet. He scrolls back and hits one specific log, takes a deep breath, and lets it play. "Captain's personal log. I have spent the last 3 hours catching up on all the bureaucratic necessities that come with being stranded on a perfect planet for a month. But Bones insists that I make what he calls an unvarnished log, even if I delete it. So here it goes. The shuttle crashed because we lost dilithium coherence. But we were able to coast to a landing, and we in the shuttle were ultimately unharmed. As far as lost in the wilderness situations, it was pretty much perfect. We had shelter. Hell, we had separate beds and quarters thanks to the shelter. We had ample food, not just because we had 8 people's allocation of rations and water, but because the planet we landed on was a sort of Eden, full of beautiful fruit trees, and the kind of green leafy vegetables Bones would give his right arm for us all to have in space. It was one of the most wonderful holidays of my life, and spending it with Spock made me realize things about myself I had been denying. That I am a coward. I already knew I loved him as something more than a colleague or brother. I knew that my heart was entirely his and had been for some time. And yet, even in Eden, even as the beacon remained silent and we were utterly alone, even as our friendship deepened, even as I started to sense that he might feel the same way, I did nothing. I put up walls. In one case, I literally put up walls by building a hut and using it as a reading nook on the long, hot afternoons we had previously lounged together in the shuttle's communal area. I am a coward. Even that last night, when we knew Starfleet was coming, and Spock broke out the fermented fruit experiments and declared them drinkable, I was in paradise, drunk to high heaven, and he looked at me and I did nothing. I feigned sleep and hated myself for being such a desperate, loathsome coward. So there you go, Bones. How's that for emotional honesty? Christ. I need a drink. The log ends. "Captain," Spock whispers. Jim turns away, unable to face him. "Supplemental. Spock, one of my dearest friends, a logical man. Can he not see? I do not mock what I adore. He knows, he must know that I want him to run his fingers through my hair, to learn all my secrets and to touch my body where so few have touched the last half decade because I've been so consumed with the want of him, that I wanted him long before the month we spent at paradise, living as if in Eden itself, that I cannot remember a time when I did not want him, and that I did not hope, desperately, to find myself in this position, but also dreaded it, for he is the great unknown. The thing I am more scared to lose than the Enterprise and all her souls. To lose him would be my fault. It would be my greatest failing. But courage calls to courage everywhere, and that is not nothing. As the ensign said, it's not nothing. Computer and log authorization Spock Delta 9. Jim turns back around and is suddenly aware how Spock has drifted closer while he has been mono-logging. Sir, Captain, Jim, he says, the last just a whisper that Jim hears perfectly well, being that his own lips are so close he can feel the shape of his name on Spock's lips right before he kisses him. Captain's log, supplemental. I'm balls deep in my first officer, my dearest friend, the love of my life. Huh. Spock, so beautiful, like this, so voracious. He's taking it hard, harder than I ever thought. I never thought we would have matching appetites, expected to need to woo him with soft caresses, gentle thrusts. But this is nothing of the sort. Does it mean anything? For is this not the nature of man to get fucked by authority? Are those of us who choose this life of military service masochists, desperate for approval, for the steadying hand of another man? Spock has always been so hard for me to read, but I must confess that when he makes these little whimpers, Jim, those glorious little noises, when I angle my hips so that these are the truth of the matter, that he will beg me to fuck him with those same lips that purse in Vulcan disapproval at my emotionalism, the contradictions within that man, also me. I have to remind myself that I am inside him, and I am going to come. I'm going to come inside him, and things will never be the same again because this is love. This is perfection. This is kismet. He comes and palms Spock's dick as he does, and the computer records the moment when Spock does too with a long, shocked moan. It does not record the moment a glowing speck is dislodged from the captain's ear, but Spock sees it and catches it gently in his hands.
Let me go! A tiny voice squeaks from inside Spock's cupped hands. My mission is complete! I must return to my people!
Exchanging a wordless glance, they spring out of the bed, Spock grasping for something to act as a container, and Jim for the tricorder sitting on the side. They reconvene, and Spock manages to deposit the squeaking and squalling life form into a beaker and slam his hand back on top before it escapes. They peer at it up close, the tricorder assisting by recording everything and magnifying what it can only see. To Jim's eye, it looks something like a butterfly, with a tiny face frowning at them from across the wings, the way that some butterflies affect eyes to scare away predators. Who are you? Jim demands, and then checks himself. Wait, you were the source of the logging?
You can call me Kismet, the tiny thing says. It is as good a name as any.
Jim flushes, flashing back to what he had said right before the orgasm took him. You are fate, Spock queries. Divine will?
Divine is pushing it, the tiny being says. But yeah, I make things happen. Small things fitting my size, but tiny beats of wings can make big changes. I heard you calling out to someone and I thought, there's my quota for this month sorted. Give this Lamech the courage to get over himself, and then I'll be good with the boss.
How? Spock asks.
Chaos, Kismet says. It's easy if you know how. I studied chaotic interactions from my PhD, you know. Now I need to get back since you did the whole...
She somehow mimes a sex act with the flutter of her wings.
I gotta check in, get my quota recognized. You know the drill, bureaucracy, am I right?
Jim nods, and exchanging a look, Spock lifts the lid on the beaker, and Kismet flutters her wings and is gone in a bright puff of purple radiation.
Jim?
Spock is hesitant, a warm presence near him, and Jim wants desperately to drag him back into bed and make more chaos together.
Yes, Spock, he replies and catches himself. I'm not logging, thank God.
It is nice to have you back, Spock says.
It's nice to be back. Nice to not be dictating my every thought. Though,
yes, Jim. Maybe I'll keep a few less secrets this time, lest I get visited again by the little chaos butterfly that could.
I think that would be wise, Spock says. Perhaps you should replicate the action that satisfied the parameters of remission regularly to ensure no repeats.
That sounds very wise, Mr. Spock, Jim husks, and then calls out toward the ceiling.
Computer?
The computer chirps. Back up that last personal log to private storage, and then go into privacy mode.
Privacy mode engaged, the computer says.
Thank you, computer.
Jim smiles, bundling Spock by the waist back down onto the bed and getting lost in him once again.
You're welcome, Jim,
the computer says with a familiar squeak, but they're both too distracted by then to notice.
The end.